Hey, what is up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show Bonus Edition. I'm your host and main man, Brad Nicholson. I'm joined today by the president and chief of TouchArcade.com, Eli Hodep. What is up?
What's up, bro?
Not much. Today, before I forget, we are talking to Zach Gage. This is the guy that made a lot of awesome games, including Spell Tower, which is on everyone's phone in your house, in your grandma's house, at the nursing home. It's all over the fucking place. Kids are probably playing it in preschool right now.
Also did Unify and BitPilot, which are also two good games.
Definitely.
Not quite as grandma accessible, I think, as Spell Tower, but
BitPilot
certainly up there.
Yeah, BitPilot might be a little bit out of her league, but you know, Spell Tower, she can get her head around. No, but we're talking to Zach Gage. I hear he's a really creative dude, and first time I've ever talked to him, even though I've read a lot about him, and I actually want to talk to him about that.
I thought we met up with him at GDC, or did we not?
Maybe I wasn't in the cool party, apparently, at that point.
Oh, well, are you ever in the cool party, Brad?
I don't think so. I'm usually relegated to the corner where we talk about freemium strategies, and I scream, this is stupid, yeah. The entire time.
Corner by monetization experts and ad sales people.
yeah. Or developers just like, should this be free? I'm like, no! No, it shouldn't! Nothing should ever be free! That's kind of off the subject. Let's go ahead and jump into our conversation with Zach Gage. Hey, welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. I'm here with the internet's Zach Gage, Spell Tower creator. Zach, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good.
You know, it's interesting. You don't have like a studio name, so you're like Zach Gage's Zach Gage.
Yep.
are you the CEO of Zach Gage?
I guess so. Okay. I don't know. It was from like art background, so just publishing under my own name.
You know, it's a smart plan too, though. I mean, because like you're totally out there, right? Everybody who downloads Spell Tower is like, "Oh, Zach Gage, great."
Yeah, it seems to pan out. Fortunately, I'm getting lucky with this zero marketing strategy.
Well, I tell you what. Speaking about marketing and stuff, I've been noticing you've been getting profiled a lot in the media. There's like a guy in New York talking about your messy apartment. Penny Arcade talks about how you sit on chairs. I mean, what's it like? I feel like I need to get in on this action. Zach Gage, what do you smell like?
Oh, I probably smell bad. I've been working on some crazy game with my roommate for the last 3 days straight, so don't probably smell good.
I smell the peace coming right here, Eli. What do you think? Can you?
I like it. Let's work this up into a full feature.
Yeah. So like we'll draw a theme between Zach Gage's odor and his new game. So that's really interesting. You're working on a new game, brother? What's that kind of like coming off Spell Tower, which was a pretty big success?
Yeah, well, that was crazy for me. I've never had anything like that. So it's really hectic, but it's been really relaxing to get into something new and to only have to concentrate on like one thing a day as opposed to like answering 1,000 emails and trying to handle like 3 different projects.
Oh, God, you're the support for Spell Tower, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's the problem with putting your name on something, I guess. Yeah. It was like, fuck it, I'll just write Zach Gage an email.
We should probably start with, like your beginnings, though, before we get ahead of ourselves. Because, I mean...
He's Zach Gage!
Well, I've always been into gaming, you know, but, like, I didn't really know about the legendary Zach Gage until, what, either... I don't remember if it was BitPilot or Unify. Which came out first?
Unify came out first.
Yeah, so Unify, I was like, oh, this is really clever. This dude seems cool.
And well, that was actually the first game I ever really made for, like, distribution.
Well, what were you doing before then, I guess?
Before that, I was doing mostly art. When I was, like, little, I wanted to make video games, and I got into programming and stuff. But then in college, I fell into art, and it was just all art, like, normal art, like photography and painting and sculpture and stuff. And then I kind of got into like interactive design, so I've done a lot of like large scale interactive pieces and weird conceptual internet art. And then I had done something for the iPhone called Synthbond, which was like a sound toy, which was kind of like my art foray onto the iPhone, and then my girlfriend had Tetris on her phone, and I was like, that's terrible. Like, and I was like, I could do something better than that. And I don't know if I did, but that's why I made Unify. And then I kind of fell into gaming, and it's been like a lot of games since then.
I like where this profile piece is going, Eli. So Zach Gage smells, and he hates Tetris.
Well, Tetris on the iPhone.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the original release of Tetris for the iPhone was very bad, and the new re-release is, I guess you could argue, equally bad with its in-app purchase junk.
I'm just thinking of headlines right now. It's much more powerful. We just say Zach Gage just straight up hates Tetris, like, period. We'll just, through the editing process, we'll erase all of this conversation.
Perfect.
It'll just be you on loop saying, I hate Tetris for 20 straight minutes.
If your background, then, is video games as art, I mean, where do you stand on the whole Roger Ebert video games are not art thing? I mean, were you one of the people that got wound up over that, or were you like us reasonable people that were like, oh, Roger Ebert said something, okay.
Oh, we're getting deep now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it felt like he was a little bit behind the times on the conversation, but I don't think I got totally wound up. I think I did comment on it on the original article, but I don't know. I'm a little past it. I think that conversation is so far over that there's not even a. I think the new conversation is, what is a game?
Well, what I thought was so interesting about that whole phenomenon was, it was like everyone that got up in arms about it, like, just failed to stop and realize that, like, hey, this is like arguing about video games with your grandpa.
Yeah, it was mostly just a weird, embarrassing move more than it was like a substantial, you know, thing that happened, I think. I was just sort of like, why would he do this? Like, why would he say that?
Yeah,
so quickly.
Just felt like stirring the pot one day.
Yeah, I mean, and somebody who's so well-versed in, like, public relations, and, you know, it just seems strange. But, yeah, whatever. It's Roger Ebert.
Yeah, that entire article kind of struck me as an elaborate troll, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was like he was reaching.
If that's the case, then Roger Ebert is actually much better at the internet than we all suspect.
That could be the case.
So you hit on something, though. What is a game? Zach Gage of Zach Gage, what is a game to you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm really, really broad about it.
Anything with a zombie in it, right?
Yeah, anything with zombies or dinosaurs. No, I don't know. Anything that's like using game mechanics or rules to kind of push an output. I don't know. I'm really interested in like all sorts of strange art projects that are going on right now that aren't really games or weren't necessarily conceived of games. But when you look at them as games, they kind of expand your ideas of what games could be.
Oh, interesting. Well, so what exactly are you talking about? Do you have like, can you name drop?
Yeah, so one of my favorite pieces, which was actually referred to me by Doug Wilson, who's the guy behind like Button and JS Joust, is this project called Sunset Solitaire by this guy Joe McKay. And basically, it's this program that he wrote where he like projects a gradient, like a three-field color gradient, onto his garage next to the sunset. And he just mixes the gradient until it matches the sunset while the sun is setting. It's just like a really slick, nice little project. And it feels like a, I don't know, it's sort of game-like. Like, you can imagine having a thing where the goal of the game is just to match the sunset. But there's no, you know, scoring. It's just you sitting there and the pleasure that you get, you know, from doing that properly. But it just seems like an interesting thing to look at, you know, in terms of games.
Yeah, and coming from an art background, you put a lot of your time into like the way something feels and looks, right? I mean, like that's is that your goal with each release, where mechanics aren't necessarily, I don't want to say they're secondary, but they're just maybe not as important initially?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of time I spend thinking about how things feel, at least in terms of the controls and the interactions. But I don't know if I would put mechanics secondary. I would more say that it's like a holistic view where the graphics and the mechanics and the controls all have to work together kind of optimally, instead of having, you know, loose threads, even if sometimes those loose threads would probably benefit sales, like adorable characters or something like that.
Because I tell you what, the first time I saw Spell Tower, before I really even considered who made it, I was just like, this looks like an Apple game, right? Oh, if Apple were, yeah, well, I mean, if Apple were to make a word game, you know, it would have something that was as pleasing to the eye as this Spell Tower is, but also have something underneath it that actually like worked the way you expected it to and works well all the time and you know is actually you know entertaining to use. And I was just kind of wondering where your art background came in on that. I was just like, is he just trying to make as polished of a product as possible, or is he actually just shooting for like, I will make the most beautiful thing ever and also make it fun, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really, it's like, it's a holistic thing. Because like when you're making art, if you're doing an interactive piece, you want it to be attractive because like people are going to need to want to interact with it. But also, you want it to, the visuals need to convey a strong amount of what's actually going on. Because if you're making an interactive piece for like a museum context, half the time people will have no idea what's happening because it's some strange thing that they've never seen. So not only do you need to bring them over, but you also need to explain through the visuals what's happening. And then it needs to be easy to use because however people are approaching it, they need to get the controls fast because it's in a museum context. And when all those things work together really well, you get kind of like a for me, like what the perfect kind of product is. Well, and then of course, also it has to be fun and interesting, which is what goes on underneath that. And so for me, when I make a game, all those parts really need to fit in, or I feel like something has gone horribly wrong.
Do you think you could ever do that with somebody else? Like, not somebody else, but a studio rather? Do you think you could ever be one of those dudes in the trenches? Or maybe even a project lead?
I mean, I have a really hard time working under somebody.
Zach Gage is also demanding as well as odious.
Well, I'm coming off great.
And he hates Tetris. Let's not forget that.
No, I don't know. So that's one thing that's been really nice about, you know, when you do art, you don't really have to work under somebody. And when you make games for the App Store, you don't have to work under somebody. But I think there are possibilities for, like, me working with a studio in terms of putting something out and then directing what people are working on. Like sometimes when I work on games, I'll work with artists or musicians. And that's kind of like a managerial role. But also sometimes I work with people, like I'm working with the Vlambeer guys on Ridiculous Fishing, and that's been really awesome. So
Eli, did you want to hit a little bit more of his history?
No, I mean, I thought that was pretty good. I mean, I, mostly just want to tell you that Spell Tower has taken over my house in a big way.
I'm sorry.
How can you explain how the handicap system actually works? Because we're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, totally.
Because there's like no documentation in the game, as far as I can tell, as to like what you're actually handicapping, like what part of the game it affects, things like that.
Right. Yeah. That should probably be in there. I think Spell Tower actually really needs documentation in a number of aspects, and I just haven't figured out how to get it in there and make it look nice yet. But how the handicap system works is essentially when you're playing through the normal puzzle mode, there's a kind of ramp up to how the requirement tiles come into play.
Okay.
And essentially the handicap system places you further along on that ramp. So if you take like a 1 or a 2 handicap, you'll see that your starting loadout of pieces has a number of handicaps on it. And if you go up to 4, it'll look a lot like Extreme Puzzle Mode does right off the bat.
Interesting. Have you thought about doing any kind of like on the fly handicapping? Because like it's always so hard to figure out like what you need to set to have like an equal game. You know, right. like I was thinking what would be cool is something along the lines of, you know, like for whoever's doing better, like their rows come up faster or something like that to keep the game kind of like very even. If that kind of thing is possible. Because, like, most of the games I play, I mean, like, unless you're playing someone that's, like, really good at word games, you know, it's like someone just demolishes the other person. And then you kind of need to figure out, like, okay, well, what do I set my handicap at so we're kind of having fun? And I don't know.
I probably haven't done nearly enough playtesting with multiplayer. But that kind of, like, rubber banding idea might be a good one. I know, like, in my household when we've played it a lot, we tend to just play a number of games like really fast and end up seeing what happens. And if it's bad or feels bad, we'll just back out and someone will increment their handicap and then we'll go back in. One thing that I really do want to get in there is at least having it so that you can increment your handicap in between games, and maybe it should just recommend an incrementation for somebody.
Right. That would be great.
That might be the way to do it, because there is sort of a built-in rubber banding right now, which is if you do too well, you run out of letters. and then the other person has all these letters.
But that's not really that big of a penalty, though, because, I mean, like, the other person with all the letters probably has the letters because they're not good at making words, and while you're just sitting there, like, being like, hey, I got a clear board, you know, make as big of a match as you want.
Yeah, I guess I probably should try and play test it with some more people, and also probably some younger people, because I think a lot of people have been playing it, like, as a family game, and I definitely haven't really tested multiplayer with anybody under, like, 20.
What's it like to have a family game under your belt? You went from BitPilot to Spelltower.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very cool. I think probably the coolest thing is none of my mom's friends understood what I did, and now they all play Spelltower.
Oh, that's nice. I still can't explain what the hell I do, so all I have to do is make a family game.
That's kind of fun. I mean, like, as iPhones have gotten more prevalent and gaming has gotten more casual, more of my family understands what I do now. But, like, you know, when I first started doing Touch Arcade stuff a few years ago, it was like, wait, what do you do? You write about games for a phone kind of thing? So, Zach, is the success of Spelltower, I mean, has that been, like, a life-changing thing for you? Or is it just, like, hey, I can really focus on making a game for the next year or two without worrying about anything kind of thing? Or how has that been?
I think, you know, it's been a little bit mixed. I think, to some extent, it's life-changing in that. It's hard to make games and put a lot of love in them for a really long time. And even though people tell you that they're really great, and like people like them in like my peer, you know, group and game designers that I know, but to not have like a critical success, is like demoralizing after a while. So in that respect, it was, you know, really life changing. I feel like I'm on the right track and I know what I'm doing and I'm doing stuff that's important. So that's great. And then I guess there are a lot of, like, I've gotten a lot of people who are trying to sort of throw money at me to start a studio or do, different kinds of things. But I probably won't end up doing any of that. I'll probably end up just hunkering down and making more games.
Well, did you have a day job before all this started, or how did this all work out?
No.
Because it's always like such a cool story when you hear like those people that are like, you know, just an example, like, oh, yeah, I was working at Starbucks, I had this game idea, you know, I whipped it out, released it on the App Store, and, you know, I was finally able to quit my job and focus on this full time, and now I have two employees. I mean, like, that's just such a cool story.
Yeah, I definitely, unfortunately, I don't have a story quite that cool. So before I did this, I worked with various architecture firms or ad agencies at various points in my life. So pretty much my strategy has always been I just make games and art stuff and I hope that it will support me. And I teach a little bit. And if I don't have enough money by the end of the year, I'll take like one or two freelance gigs that are short and pay high. Mm. And that's how I've been surviving for the last 2 years. But
well, that's cool.
At least I don't have to do that. So I quit my freelance gigs.
So what would it take for someone to actually talk you into starting a proper studio?
Yeah, give us a number.
Huh. Well, not even necessarily a number. But because people that are interested in like, you know, pursuing games as art and like furthering the game field. I mean, like if someone came to you with like a blank check, you probably wouldn't be interested. But if, you know, they had like all these other perks and benefits and things they were going to do to like cultivate that, I mean, what would it take?
It would take a really great It would take a really great person with some money who I felt like I could actually have a good personal relationship with. Mm. And it would take a really great business manager.
Because
I don't really want to run a business. But I do feel like I have more work than I can do myself that I'd like to be doing. And so having a studio around me that could help with that would be really great. But taking all the time to do that and shifting into doing mostly management, I think would be really rough, and I wouldn't get to do most of the work that I actually want to do for a couple of years if I did something like that.
So essentially, we just need to go to Canada and kidnap like half of Capybara and bring them to New York, and then we'll have Zach Gage Studios.
I think Nathan would be very upset with me.
So you mentioned that you're making a game. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but I do like to ask studios about their future. You know, what are you working on, my man?
I would love to talk about it. Well, the game that I just made was for a event that's happening at NYU on next Friday called No Quarter, which is basically an annual kind of gallery-style event where they commission 3 to 4 artists to make new games. and it's going to be really killer this year. One of the other guys who's in it is JW from Blambeer, and he'll be showing off his tennis game. And the game that I made with my roommate, Jess Warby, who's an illustrator, is basically a combative food-eating contest set in the post-apocalypse.
And I love it.
And it's basically, it's a card game. So it's a sort of a play on deck building games, except that instead of a deck, you just have your mouth, which is five cards. And if you can't fit something into your mouth when you have to eat, then you have to like spew a card at your opponent, and then they can choose whether or not they want to eat it. And the cards have all these powers. So like things will happen when you swallow the cards, or when you have them in your mouth, they'll have like kind of active powers. It's a little bit gross, but it's actually not gross when you play it.
I love the. Please tell me this is coming out, like a wide release kind of thing.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, right now we have it as a card game, and we're getting a bunch of decks printed. And then after that, we may do a Kickstarter and maybe a digital version. If I could convince somehow Playdeck to like make a digital version of it, that would probably be like a dream.
Yeah, dude, yeah, that's
Kickstarter's
awesome.
Perfect for those like physical little small run card games. I mean,
yeah, I'm really excited about it. I've never done a card game or really even a two player game before. Spell Tower is two player, but it was designed as a single player game. So
yeah. Hey Zach, thank you so much for joining us today, my man. Like if people want to hit you up on the internets, where should they go?
Probably just my Twitter, which is at Helvetica, like the font.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, my man, and best of luck with the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, what is up? You made it to the third section of our podcast. Congratulations. Here's 12 coins. I'm your main man, Brad Nicholson.
Spend these coins on?
You can spend it on any in-app currency.
Speed up my farming?
Yes. You can buy my my Brad Bucks with them. Or you can give
I'm heavily invested in Brad Bucks.
Or you can give me 99 cents, and I'll give you all the Brad Bucks you want. Wink, wink. Joined us this part of the episode by Eli Hodep, of course. That's his voice right there. We just got done talking with the internet's Zach Gage.
Of Zach Gage.
Of Zach Gage fame. and it was an awesome conversation. I love that guy. First time I've talked to him, thought it was magical.
Yeah. And I love Spell Tower. I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, you kind of nerded out on him. I don't know if
you
noticed that.
Spell Tower is so good. I mean, like, I don't know what it is about these. It seems like every once in a while, a very simple game comes out of the App Store where, you know, at first glance, you're like, oh, all right, whatever. It's a word game. Who cares? Mm-hmm. And then, like, you sit down and play it, and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, I don't think he was expecting someone to nerd out on him, because you were all like, what do you think about the handicaps?
What do you think about handicapping? I don't know. Do you think it should be done on the fly?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you were typing on NeoGAF as you were talking to him.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, that was great though. It's fun to hear that kind of like that level of enthusiasm. That was fantastic. He's a fascinating guy too. I love what he's bringing to the table, and I'm kind of surprised his response to my, you know, like how much do you focus on in games? Is it more about art than gameplay to you? And I get where he's coming from. But I will say I am surprised that it's not more about art, because his games are fucking gorgeous. I mean, they really are. I mean, they're above and beyond 99% of what's available on the App Store for sure.
I think it's very underappreciated when you see games like Spell Tower that just like really nail typography, because like that's totally an underappreciated art these days, it seems like, because everyone just uses word processors, you know, most of it's automatic. Mm-hmm. So when you see like very beautiful type and things that are using that in interesting ways, like I think that goes over most people's head.
What's your favorite font, Eli Hodep?
Comic Sans, of course.
Mm. I'm a fan
Second
of Courier.
Only to Wingdings.
Wingdings is amazing. And it can also predict the future, I learned in grade school.
Oh, God.
Grade you school. Remember that shit?
Grade school, are you really that young?
What do you mean, am I really that young? I am a young and beautiful man, is what I am. I don't know if you knew this, but I'll just go ahead and go out and say this on the internet. For all to hear, I'm young and beautiful. And my body is as thick and I don't know.
I agree with one of those things. You can choose which.
Nice. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, Awesome. I'm glad you did. If you want to email us,
subscribe, rate us on iTunes, download the app, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, download our app. I forgot about that. We should probably add that into our ending spiel, shouldn't we?
Yeah, might be a good idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you want to contact us, podcast@touchok.com. If you want to read us on your iPhone as well as listen to us on your iPhone, you can do so right now for free. Download the Touch Arcade app. Just type in Touch Arcade in your iTunes bar. Not only can you subscribe to this very podcast that you're listening to from that, you can also get our app. Did I mention it's free?
It is free.
Totally. And you can also reach us via Twitters and the Facebooks, twitter.com/TouchArcade, facebook.com/TouchArcade. We'll be back with you this Friday with another episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Music in this episode is from overclockedremix.org. Both songs are from the video game DuckTales. I asked Eli what music I should put in here. He suggested DuckTales, so I went with it. That is seriously my reason. First song you heard is called Moondust. The remixer on that is Tex Sound. And that's Tex with two X's. Second song you heard is called The Amazon Session. Remixer on that was Gux. You can get both these songs for free on overclockedremix.org.